Now taxes is 100% free when you file in the TurboTax app if you didn't file with us last year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Just do your own taxes in the app by 2/18.
What if I have lots of forms?
All good. All 100% free.
What if I had three jobs?
Still 100% free.
What if I once saw Bigfoot?
That has nothing to do with taxes, so still 100% free.
Now that's what I'm talking about.
Now this is taxes. See if you qualify in the TurboTax app. Excludes TurboTax Live. Must start and file in app by 2/18.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Alex. And welcome back. Happy New Year to On Air with Dan and Alex. And if you are listening to us on Spotify, where we have most of the listeners, or on Amazon or on Apple Music or wherever, it might be the time you want to quickly switch to listening to us on YouTube, where you will also see us in vision, because today Dan and I are both connected. Dan, I mean, we're not together. Dan is in his natural habitat. Dan, where are you?
Well, I'm not actually standing where you think I am. I know this green screen is so good, but
it's very
if
effective.
You're seeing me in vision, I am standing right outside the world's best airport, Gothenburg Landvetter Airport.
So I see that he is taking his delusional little antics fresh with him into 2025. It's the new year, same him. Well, look, I feel I haven't seen you in forever. It has been ages. We are officially kicking off a brand new season of On Air with Dan and Alex. First thing I want to ask you is, can we change the name of the podcast this year to On Air with Alex and Dan? Because I think it just has a better ring to it.
No. Next question.
Okay. Second question then is, how have you been? What have you been up to? What have you been flying? Tell me everything.
So I keep thinking about you over Christmas since last year's Christmas podcast because because you were like, this is the time to do nothing, to relax.
The time to relax.
Yeah. So I really tried to embrace that this year. I did a little bit of work, but I also took a lot of time off. And now I've just spent spent the past 10 days just in front of my computer, panicking, trying to catch up.
Panicking, saying to yourself, why did Alex tell me to switch off?
Why did I listen to Alex? I know. And I was like, oh, I really felt so healthy during those weeks, like when I took time off. And now when you come back into work, it's like, well, suddenly there is stress and stuff. But anyway, it was nice. How are your holidays?
Good. Not too bad. It was very nice to be with the family. And I was in London where it was absolutely freezing, but didn't snow until much after Christmas Day. But it was really freezing. Also, I felt that the holiday period went very, very quickly.
Yeah.
But it was nice to see a lot of people, friends and family. And yeah, it's a wholesome time to be together. More important than ever was this one just now, because it was the first time since the sad passing of my grandfather. So it was nice to have been with all of the family, and that's real comfort. So it was good. And like you, I know I was also, you know, I think it's the time of the year that my Disney Plus subscription is like, oh, hi again. Like, you know, welcome back. Because each night I'm thinking, no, don't watch something. Don't watch a political thriller. Don't watch the series about this. Just try and get in the mood. And, you know, it's the time for family films and holiday films and whatever. So it was good. And also, go on.
Did you watch Carry on Netflix?
No, I didn't. I didn't watch it. No, I mean, that's not a Christmas film. So I was like,
no, it is. The funny thing is, it's set over Christmas for whatever reason. It was released over Christmas.
Okay.
It's not the most amazing. I think, like, for any Av geek or wait, before we get into anything, do you say Av geek or AV geek?
I don't say either.
Shut up. If you had to say one of them.
I'm not the biggest fan of the quote, but I think people that are obsessed with aviation, the correct term is AV geek.
That's what I thought, but people keep telling me, no, it's AV geek. And I'm like, this
AV sounds like you're obsessed with like audiovisual.
I know. Anyway, so anyone who's interested in aviation, whenever we watch an aviation themed movie, there's always things that are going to be wrong and bother you, you know.
Oh, but
I think looking away from that it was a thoroughly entertaining movie. Maybe toward the end it gets a bit bizarre, but I do recommend it because movies set in airports around airplanes are always just fun, you know?
But there's, fun and until there's everything that, as you said, like starts to piss you off when they're showing 10 different... How can there not be one person involved in the production that says... Guys, we just showed a 320. Maybe don't show a twin aisle aircraft in the cabin, you know. Maybe don't imply that there's an upstairs, you know, just like the basics. I can forgive a 321 suddenly becoming a 320, you know, halfway down the film, or a 737 even becoming, you know, whatever.
757.
Not the basics. But I tell you what I was watching over Christmas and New Year. I mean, I guess it was nothing short of a Christmas miracle. I couldn't believe my eyes when I got the notification that the video that we have been discussing for about 6 months of the flight that you and I had taken from Paris to Doha suddenly was there on YouTube for the world to see. I was categorically terrified / excited. Excited because I knew we had such an amazing flight. Terrified because I know what you are capable of in terms of the edit, right? And you could have easily have given me a terrible edit. But I will hand it to you. I enjoyed the video so much. I felt it was so well documented. Oscar did an amazing job with the edit. It was funny. I thought it was an amazing way to document what was such a fun flight. And I watched it and I only concluded, we've got to do 10 of these a year. It was just so much fun. I really enjoyed the video and the comments have been hilarious to scroll through.
Yeah. It was so much fun. I wish we could do it 10 times a year. We'll probably end up doing it closer to once a year. we'll try our best.
If we can make it work like once a year, then I'll take it because it was good.
It was like 7 or 8 years between our previous flight and that one.
Yes.
So we can definitely do better. But yeah, huge.
And there were so many things that I forgot. For example, you were videoing me and I was sat watching the presidential debate and I was like, okay, you know, that sounds like me. And it was Biden. I forgot that at one point he was the candidate. And here we are now, days away from the inauguration of our favorite person, Donald J. Trump. We won't go into details. Everyone knows it. But it was a fun watch and I was really pleased. And then shortly after that, I watched a video that I think you turned around in impressive time because you were one of the first in the world to fly on Emirates' brand new Airbus A350. A350s are in service everywhere, but not at Emirates. And there you were. How was that?
I mean, it was so much fun. But I think, you know, the thing I'm most grateful for is getting to meet the other YouTubers and like people in this space that I got to meet, because they're kind of like colleagues, you know, except I just never, ever get to meet them. So all the people I met, I've never met in person before. And just there's something so nice about meeting people who can relate to you on the highest level possible, because everyone who's a YouTuber at this level lives for their job because it just takes such a big commitment. And then once, you know, you live for it, it's your whole life. So you have so much you can understand and so much you can, you know, discuss. So that was just so, so nice. Not to mention that they all turned out to be really nice people.
That's helpful, right?
Yeah. And then the flight was just amazing. The thing is, you know how I value my sleep.
Yeah.
On the flight from Edinburgh to Dubai, it was an overnight flight. I got about an hour and a half of sleep with everything that was going on. So I landed and then it's like, we need to get this video out as soon as possible. And I was like, but I really need to sleep. So after that video was done, it was like I'd flown to the US. My jet lag and my circadian rhythm was messed up. But yeah,
do fun video. Do you wear a whoop yet? I can't remember.
What's a whoop? It's like a wristband?
This.
I have an Apple Watch. I don't know.
Oh, okay. So it's monitoring your sleep and everything. Health habits. Okay, yeah. Because once you become obsessed, I mean, I can be falling asleep and think, oh God, not going to get much REM tonight.
You know?
I know.
it's so bad, I find, to actually track your sleep, because sometimes I'll wake up and I'll be like, I feel amazing. And then I look at my watch. Yes. And I'm like, like, this is terrifying.
I agree. My friend said, Garnim, who you know, he said he was like, take it off. He said, take it off and listen to your body, because you're so right. I feel terrible when I wake up and I'm like, that was a great sleep. Like, and I slept 8.5 hours and I've got energy and I'm ready. And I open my phone and it's like, let's talk about your restless night. What? Right? And it's showing, and it literally has that as a notification. And then it puts me in the red and it's showing me that, yeah, you were in bed for 8.5 hours, but you didn't sleep that long, buddy. And I'm thinking, oh, whoa, this is, you know, the same time, there are times where I doubt and I think, I think I slept okay. Open the phone. It gives me full green. Every metric is amazing. And just by seeing that, I'm like, I feel great. I'm like, let's start the day, which is not right, is it?
I mean,
it's not.
Yeah, I wish there was a way that it would only notify you of the great nights of sleep. So on days when you feel a bit so-so, then you're like, oh, I slept great. So you perk up, but you can ignore the bad nights, because there have been so many times, like we said, where I wake up feeling amazing. Then I find out I apparently had terrible sleep. And then all day I'm like, actually, I am a bit lethargic. I do feel a bit tired, because you just tell it's yourself your that. Yeah,
I know, you're so right. Over Christmas and New Year, I mean, it was, you know, for this, it was a disaster, because it couldn't understand why I was having so many late nights and out so much and whatever. And on one of the nights, it was about 1:30 a.m. or whenever, and we were still playing Monopoly, and we were only then about to start playing charades at about 2:30 in the morning, which went on until 4. And I kid you not, I was like, yeah, we can play charades, just give me a minute. Yeah.
Taking the watch off. Is not allowed to know.
He doesn't need to know about that.
You just put it on. Don't you have like a kid in your family? I think you do, right? Like, you just put it on them and they're asleep. Yeah.
I'm like, it's just to keep an eye.
Exactly.
That's so true.
This season, I discovered Catan. Have you ever played Catan?
Why do I know this game?
C-A-T-A-N. Oh my gosh. It is amazing. Next time I come to Doha, I'm bringing Catan so that we can play it.
Why do I know this? But yeah, at the same time, can't think...
It's a classic, like Monopoly. So I know there's so many listeners right now who are like, the fuck, you just discovered Catan? But yeah, I just did.
And the fact that I can't remember what it is.
Yeah. I just played it for the first time this Christmas.
Is it a board game?
Yeah, it's so, so fun.
I've played this. I have. I need to quickly check. I've definitely played this. That's
anyway.
True. So you had the 850 was great. You slept terrible.
Yeah, it wasn't that I slept terrible. It was just I had no time to sleep.
Because you were too busy being a social butterfly.
Yeah, or just like eating and then record. There was so much to record and I wanted to write the script on the flight so that I could just narrate when I landed. So anyway, that was fun. But my conclusion, which is so sad in a way, is that nothing still beats the A380. It's just an unbeatable plane. And I think you've flown it quite a bit the past few weeks, right?
Yeah. So I've now kind of made a commitment that wherever possible, I will try to do the 380 over other aircraft, knowing that we won't have them around for long. And, you know, there's going to be a time, some point in the near, you know, not too distant future, where we're going to be saying, oh, remember when, you know, it's like all about the A380. So, yeah, you know, I have flown a few times on the 380 over the last few weeks, just choosing it over the 350 or the 777.
Good.
And like, you know, for example, the bathroom in first class.
Yeah.
I just can't get enough of it. Even though we've done it 100 times, I'm like, this is amazing. You know, it's just, this is what a commercial aircraft should be about. And the distance between, you know, the front and the back and the going down the spiral staircase. And you just can't beat this incredible gentle giant. You know, it really is just it's amazing.
The A350 is amazing, but the A380 is just never be an A380.
Yeah.
And the 747 is iconic. It's amazing, but it's still not close to an A380. I remember the first time I flew the 747-8. And this was in, I think, 2012. I was, of course, an AV geek back then too. And I went in with such high expectations, having flown the E380. I was like, oh, like another E380 upcoming.
Yeah.
And I looked around. I was like, why does this feel like a 777? What a wasted opportunity. And that just made me appreciate the E380 so much more, because there is only one with all that space in business class, those lockers along the side on the upper deck.
In economy on the upper deck. Those airlines amazing. That have it up there. Fly the A380s while you can, guys. Like, You know what?
Emirates has just started sending their two-class A380 to Copenhagen, which they did several years pre-COVID.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
To me, I was just like, now I have an obvious thing to book people in my family on if they're going to anywhere east of Sweden.
Yeah.
It's like, I'll tell them, take the train down to Copenhagen and fly upper deck economy on the Emirates A380.
Perfect.
You will be so comfortable. And it's just, the A350, very nice economy, but there's no upper deck economy there with storage along the side.
No. We need an economy class advert that takes inspiration from the Jennifer Aniston one of the years ago we've spoken about before. We did an economy class one where we're, hi, I'm looking for the lockers next to the seats. There are no lockers here, man. Well, I'm going to look pretty silly talking to my seatmate through that massive gap on the seat. There are no gaps here.
And you know what?
I realize there are some people listening to this thinking, what the fuck what is the he going on about? But yeah.
And you know what? We have to petition for airlines, at least Emirates, Qatar, the Singapore airlines. There has to be something on the 777X. Give us something. Give us hope.
Like, we need some special social
Emirates
area,
needs
some
a
special
condensed
element.
Bar, because Emirates without the bar is not even
they're
going to
go extinct. The whole concept of social areas are just going to, and that's it. And then we're like, oh, thank God we were blah blah blah.
They need a Virgin Atlantic bar at the very least.
Yes, you're right. Because Virgin have a good use of social area space that doesn't bite into profits in the cabin, but kind of reinvents the area of door two.
Yes. They have on the 787, for example, with a bar that stands out. There's some seats. You don't need what Qatar and Emirates have on the A380
Let me open the airline CEO group chat and write, guys. We need social areas. Door 2, 777X. This is at all 777X operators. Yeah. Let's see who's in the chat.
Karsten Spohr is going to be like, okay, Alex, certainly.
Who's
when
in the chat?
They don't even want to serve coffee in economy.
Absolutely going to be willing for the opposite of that, but let's see. So there's a message going to Emirates, Qatar, Singapore, Lufthansa, Etihad, Cathay, ANA, BA, Air India, and even Cargo Lux.
Cargo Lux has a bar. No, but definitely. I mean, come on. Yeah, isn't it true that Emirates without the bar just doesn't feel like? What is Emirates without a bar in their fleet? There needs to be one.
Maybe it's just Emirate. Emirates. I don't know. It takes away from the name or something. I don't know. Well, look, it's a pleasure to be back with you. I'm looking forward to getting into the groove of every Wednesday, where we're going to be discussing everything that's happening in the world of aviation, all of the hot topics and beyond, and also exclusives and more interviews lined up for the season. We hope that you guys, the listeners, have had a very nice festive period while we were off air, and a great start to the new year. And as always, you can get in touch with us via the usual platforms, contacting either myself or Dan via Instagram is usually best, with your scenarios, with your queries, your questions, your anecdotes, your travel stories over the past few weeks. We love to hear them, and we will feature many of them in the episodes going forward. So do get in touch. But for now, you know how I keep up with kind of where aviation meets politics. So Pakistan International Airlines has been under a European ban for quite some time now, right? They haven't been able to operate to Europe because of their own concerns with safety. And don't get me wrong, it's not PIA being concerned about their own safety. It's Europe being absolutely concerned about things such as fake pilot's licenses. And there was a whole scandal around that. the way in which they conduct their maintenance and all of this. So they've been pretty much shut out from most of Europe for some time, but they are back. They have jumped through the necessary regulatory hurdles, and PIA have wanted to make a splash with their return to Paris. And boy, did they. Dan, what happened?
Okay, so I'm going to try to describe this as well as I can for those of you. I mean, everyone's listening, but basically they tweeted / Instagrammed. They posted an image to announce that they're back in Paris. So it's a beautiful photo of the Eiffel Tower with the Parisian flag sort of shading the sky, a view of the Seine. And then they write, Paris, we're coming today. The part where they could have left it here. They added the logo in the corner. Beautiful. Then someone just decided to go a little too far by adding.
Too far is an understatement.
Yeah. By adding a 777 flying right on screen, a few meters from flying into the Eiffel Tower. So their way of announcing.
They still haven't deleted it. I mean, no. Can I hold it up onto here?
Yeah, do that. So people watching the video.
So if you're listening on YouTube, okay, you can see it. So they still have not deleted this. This is tweeted and shared on Instagram and everywhere from the official account for Pakistan International Airlines, the national carrier. So instead of just showing us Paris, this is what they showed us. So it says, Paris, we're coming today, right? And I'll just zoom in a bit there.
Yeah.
And that is an aircraft flying directly towards the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah. Well, you know, if their goal was to raise awareness, they certainly have, because I think the entire world knows that Pakistan International Airlines is returning to Paris. It's just
But I mean, this felt like a threat. I mean, it's just crazy. Even with the phrasing, like, Paris, we're coming today, showing an aircraft just seconds away from the Eiffel Tower. What were they thinking? I've seen so many scenarios. Some people have said, oh, the graphic designer is like a Gen Z post 2001, so it doesn't even have it in their head about what this looks like.
Yeah.
Even so. Some have said it's deliberate in order to go viral, which it has. Others have said it's just careless.
I highly doubt it is deliberate, but it's certainly careless that they would post that. And to me, it's kind of ironic that they were banned from the EU over safety concerns, because even something like that, not the fact they don't have someone working on it that has enough scrutiny of what they're working on, even if there was no basis in history for an aircraft flying into a monumental building, still maybe think, should I just mirror the aircraft or find a photo where it's flying the other direction?
That's simple.
Then it has to get approved in multiple steps. It's like, surely this just reflects that the airline still has a long way to go with everything, because something like this should not be posted.
With the safety culture and with the... I don't understand how that. I mean, where is their sense of self-reflection? It has gone viral. They've been discussing this on news channels all around the world, just thinking that the whole thing is some kind of joke. How could they have published this? It's still there.
Yeah.
How many days later now? 3 days later, it's still there. That's insane. How was this not deleted in the first 30 minutes?
Yeah. Just so questionable. But also, I'm curious if we have any listeners who actually plan on flying Pakistan International Airways. By the way, we should add do you know that Pakistan imposed these huge departure taxes last year?
Yes.
Premium cabin tickets?
Yes, massive. So Pakistan used to be a cheap point of departure to be able to fly, for example, Gulf carriers in business or in first class. And they have imposed massive, I mean, arguably they're like tariffs. They are fees on the privilege of flying in a premium cabin. I mean, kiss goodbye to any kind of decent, not just deal, but premium travel with foreign carriers. If the ticket starts and begins in Pakistan, what were they thinking? I mean, this is not a way to build back their aviation sector.
Yeah. This is also for Pakistan International Airlines. No, it's not just for
So as far as I can, and if memory serves me correct, but I'm happy to be corrected on it, but if memory serves me correct, I believe it is something that is applicable to all carriers, including the national carrier, because these fees are usually stipulated by, for example, the civil aviation or the regulator or the ministry. So it's,
It's just absolutely bizarre. So to give an example, on a one-way business class ticket departing from Pakistan to Europe, much of Asia, Australia or New Zealand, it's $750 in tax just on that ticket. To the Middle East and Africa, which keep in mind, the UAE or Oman are like an hour and a half flight from some parts of Pakistan. It's about $380 for a ticket in tax, which is just, what are they thinking? I mean,
no, I mean, that's no way to rebuild. And what's funny is they had, there was a bit of talk in a buzz, I would say, in 2023 about Pakistan's aviation sector being this kind of this untapped territory of with great huge potential and opportunity. But everything that I've seen emerge from there is so incredibly questionable and negative in terms of the decision making that I can't help but wonder who they have involved in such decisions, or whether or not those that they said they were going to involve are no longer working with them on it. Because I mean, to have actually passed through such a heavy tax, which is only going to hurt the idea of anyone using the airline, whether it's to transit or to visit, is not very sensible. Not very sensible at all. Well, speaking of not very sensible decisions, it doesn't just happen in Pakistan, because the UK's flag carrier. Go on.
First of all, just quick reminder to everyone: starting last week, you now have to apply for a visa waiver to enter the UK.
Yes. So quick reminder,
if you're going to the UK, Google that and make sure you've applied.
That's for everyone, no matter where you are flying from. Yeah. If you are not a UK citizen / resident, you now have to pay a tenner, as they say, in order to get that visitor visa. That's a fee that didn't previously exist. It only actually existed for the Gulf countries. They trialed it on the Gulf first, but now they've expanded it globally. Right, that's the government pissing the rest of the world off. But let's talk about the national airline peeing off just about everyone. I mean, I have never known a story involving British Airways to unite the country in the way that it has. I mean, whether they are A-list celebrities or the humble Avios collector, they are united in anger at what British Airways have done. Dan, you are the miles and points expert. I can't think of anyone better to give me your take on what the hell has happened and what this means for the public.
Yeah, so British Airways, obviously almost every airline has a loyalty program. British Airways has historically had one of the biggest in the world, the biggest in Oneworld. And let's remind you, the Oneworld is an alliance that both Alex and I love. We are loyal to Oneworld. We think they have fantastic benefits for frequent flyers across partner airlines, which you don't really see in Star Alliance and SkyTeam. So a lot of people
To break it down, what are some of those benefits that you and I love about Oneworld? Okay, in a nutshell, it's the fact that the moment you hit even just a bronze equivalent level, you're in the business class check-in, even if you're flying economy. You've got, you know, lounge access if you hit the silver and above level. You have different priorities, whether it's to do with luggage, to do with standbys, changing flights, dedicated phone lines. It's genuinely an incredibly helpful tool that I would encourage anyone, even if you fly a little bit, to get in the game with a Oneworld carrier. Collect with who in Oneworld?
Well, I've been British Airways. That's the thing. I've been using the Executive Club. And we should note, to me, I think the best benefit that you will never see among the other alliances is getting free extra legroom seating on most partners. So for example, most Oneworld elites will get free main cabin extra on American Airlines, which they can charge $150 for on some flights. You get it completely for free as an elite. So it's just an incredibly generous benefit for the Alliance to give.
Okay, so you're top tier with Oneworld with British Airways, okay? And this is something that has been quite easily. And if I understand it correct, explain it correctly, until now, it has been based on where you're flying and what you're flying rather than revenue based. So that means that somebody with a, you know, somebody pretty savvy could end up flying, let's say, one trip from London to Kuala Lumpur. And they get this amazing deal and they're flying business class. And then they take another quick trip, maybe just a European business class flight, let's say from London to Nice and back. And because they've been clever with the number of tier points that they would collect and also having not spent that much, they are gold, right? And suddenly they are at the top of the One World tree. This is why British Airways have categorically the... is one of the airlines with the most number of frequent flyers in the world. They have such a big scheme. It's why when you board a flight, for example, from London to Paris, more than half the plane has got status, more than half the plane are in group one, more than half the plane are in the lounge. And sometimes, you know, sometimes that's been a frustration for passengers that are flying BA. So the first major change is that all of this is now going revenue-based, meaning that to collect 1 point, you have to have spent £1. It's no longer based on distance and the type of trip that you're making. It's going revenue-based. You have always said to me that you think it's only a matter of time until they go revenue-based. Yeah. So when you knew that, were you worried?
So first of all, we should say that in 2024, they already made points earnings revenue-based because British Airways has a system where you earn redeemable points, but then separate to that, you can also earn tier points, which is what is counted towards status. So, you know, it's, as you explained, it's been very easy to game that system if you're smart.
Yeah.
Just
you don't even have to be smart. You can just rely on people like you to guide them through it, and then before you know it, they're at gold, right?
Yeah. Well, the example you gave would give you silver, which is still Oneworld Sapphire. Okay. You get great benefits, and considering it literally took one business class trip, round trip to Asia from Europe, is crazy on Qatar, for example. So, I think the system was definitely way too generous. We all enjoyed it so much. I enjoyed getting status super easily. And everyone has to, you know, people are very sour about this, but everyone has to admit that, it was
Explain why they are sour. Because these new thresholds, I'm going to get them up. I mean,
I'll explain it, but I just need to explain that I think the thresholds are crazy, but I think people would have been super sour about any change to the system at all when we need to acknowledge that it was way too good a deal to begin with. And there's a problem with too many elites. The lounges are too full. Too many people have this or that benefit. And there just needs to be some sort of, you know, if more people are spending more on flights and more people are booking business class for leisure, then there needs to be a way to distinguish. But what British Airways has gone and done, which you can explain, is just way too far in the other direction. So now tell us the new thresholds.
So for example, to get gold, right? So to be gold, as you said, so to maybe only a couple of business class flights required and you're gold and that's it. And you've got the top tier status. To get gold now in the new system, it will require 20,000 tier points annually. Now, the listener might wonder, what is 20,000 tier points? Well, British Airways have made that nice and clear. 20,000 tier points means that the passenger would need to spend 20,000 British pounds in order to qualify for gold. 20,000 pounds. To put that into clearer perspective, British Airways gold card members were not spending anywhere near £20,000. So this is the fastest way for the airline to eradicate a significant portion of their frequent flyer community, because they say, and they're right, the lounges are too crowded. And basically, you know, reading through all the PR, reading through all the way in which they're trying to convince this is based on customer feedback and blah, 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 I think we know what's at play. the eradication is what they want. They don't, they have too many frequent flyers holding the top tier status, and they need to get rid of them. They want people now. They want the passengers who are spending 20,000 British pounds. And let's be clear, the gold card members who were flying British Airways for leisure and collecting points and staying loyal to BA for leisure are not spending anywhere near that amount. And so that wipes all of them out of the BA Executive Club, soon to be rebranded the British Airways Club.
Yeah.
What British Airways is clearly chasing here is the business traveler, the corporate traveler that is not paying for the flights themselves, but rather work is sending them here, there and everywhere. And it very easily work is racking up a bill for that individual that is in excess of 20,000. It wants those travelers to have the space in the lounge for them. It's not about the passengers that have been able to figure out that, okay, if they take, you know, one business class to Florida a year and then they, you know, go around Southern Europe and Southern Italy and Southern Spain, a couple of club Europes, which you can get for like £200 return, then they're fine. Then they get gold. They don't want those passengers anymore. And understandably, they have pissed off a lot of people. I mean, it's been on front page of news. It's been discussed on news channels. It's been discussed on late night shows. It's been discussed by big famous commentators who have said, what are they doing? They are blowing up the Executive Club. And I think a lot of people were of the belief that there was so much backlash that BA are going to have no choice but to U-turn on this. I will call it here on the podcast. I don't think they are U-turning. I think they knew exactly the level of backlash. Oh, my earpiece has just popped out. I think they knew exactly the level of backlash, and I think they're just going to ride out this storm.
Well, it's very typical BA, because they do a lot of stuff that generates backlash. And ultimately, even the fact that they have Club Suite, which is such a great seat, is kind of surprising, because they managed with the old club world for years just based on their position alone. You have Virgin Atlantic in London, which by almost every measure is a vastly superior airline with an incredible lounge in London, just a consistently lovely experience when you don't get downgraded or your flight is canceled. But even then, they're lovely. So
do you know what's amazing? I'm quite amazed how you're like, oh, that's so lovely. And I'm like, didn't they make his 2024 like absolute chaos for the poor guy?
I know. And
every time he tried to fly them, he never did.
I know. But just like the way they handled everything, approving my compensation within a day, all this stuff. But anyway, the point is that in London, you already have one alternative to BA that is so much better. And even then, BA is raking it in. They have so many people who are loyal to them because of their dominant position in one of the world's busiest, most lucrative aviation markets. So people can be as upset as they want, and people can say, I'm never flying BA again.
They don't
have a choice. BA doesn't care. People don't have a choice but to fly them if they want to go to so many places. So it sucks for consumers, but for the airline, it makes sense to do. Okay, it makes sense to make the requirements higher. Here's where I don't agree with the changes.
Do you not think it's a bit too high? Like, do you not think 20,000 British pounds is a bit excessive per passenger for gold?
Yeah. Well, I just think that it's not thought through at all. And I loved when we had Ben Lipsey, head of Flying Blue, Air France KLM's loyalty program, on the podcast.
Because
he highlighted the most important part of a loyalty program, which is making people behave irrationally. I was having a lunch after doing the Emirates A350 delivery. I was having a lunch with a friend in Dubai Mall. And he was like, oh, I'm going to go buy a MacBook in the Apple store. And I was like, oh, why don't you just order it online? Why would you go to the store? You can get it more custom. He's like, oh, I want to earn the Emirates Skywards points, because you get points when you show up in Dubai Mall.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, so we go to the store and they're like, we only have this model in stock, which is $600 more than the model you want. And my friend was seriously, he was like, but I will get the points, you know? And I was like, How many points do you get?
And
let's calculate
his behavior has just been changed, right?
Yeah. And I was like, by buying this computer, the whole like $2,000+ computer in this store, you're going to earn 1,000 points, which is worth like $12. So you're here about to spend $600 more and not get the exact model you want because you want really want one that's custom from online just to get 1,000 points. That is the type of irrational behavior that loyalty programs should try to make people engage in, because
in the British Airways scenario, the irrational behavior is on the BA side rather than the consumer side, right?
Yes, exactly. So the problem here, and what Ben Lipsey has done so well with Flying Blue, is that Flying Blue has more of a traditional tier point system like British Airways had, where there are still ways to kind of game it if you're smart. If you book I'm going to Kuala Lumpur, but if I fly to Singapore, the flight will be 20 miles longer and jump it up a tier. So then I'll earn more. And it just makes it, you know, I'll get into the next tier of tier points, for example, based on the distance.
Have you been approached since everything that's happened with BA of people trying to figure out how they're going to save their stages? Because apparently they're also doing what's known as, well, apparently it's going to be a hard landing, meaning if people are at gold, apparently if people are at gold, they won't drop to silver. They will drop down to blue.
No way.
To qualify for the bronze and silver beneath, then it's just like starting fresh.
Yeah, that's just
crazy. Which understandably has annoyed a lot of people as well. Yeah.
So, okay, we'll get into what people should do now in a second, but there's just so much more to say about this. I feel like we've opened a can of worms talking about
topic. I mean, they have, even people that have no idea about aviation have been in touch with me about what British Airways have done, because they've done everything right. And they, you know, that as in the consumer, I've got consumers who barely fly, bless them, and that's fine, but they do collect, and they are bronze, and they stick with BA, aspiring to be silver, aspiring to get the lounge and all of this, and they just feel that BA have just let off a complete and utter we don't give a and they're wondering what they wasted any time for. She literally said to me, I don't go to Skyscanner and search the cheapest fare. I'm like, she says she tells her husband, no, you know, we'll fly to BA, because then we'll be, this time next year, we'll be in the lounges before. So, you know, we'll no longer have to have a prep breakfast. We'll have it in the lounge. And
Come on, a prep breakfast is honestly tastier and better than the stuff you're going to invest extra for to get in the lounge. So that's also an example of irrational behavior. But making it just based on costs like this is so not a smart move for British Airways. Because if you think about it, the people who are spending £20,000 are either people who can afford to fly any airline they want, and also people are flying on business. Their companies are paying, so they're not making these decisions. When they fly for leisure, they might then choose to go with BA because they have the status. But you want the people who are actually, they're completely free to choose any airline they want. Their company doesn't have a contract with British Airways, or their company isn't, you know, incentivizing booking with British Airways. They could choose any European airline. If, let's say, they're flying from Gothenburg, they have the choice of Star Alliance, Oneworld, or SkyTeam. And they want people who will go, okay, I'll pay a bit extra for British Airways because I can get status benefits. But that's just not going to happen here. And there was a great blog article by Economy Class and Beyond on Boarding Area, just giving some examples of... So he had an example here of, if you book an economy class ticket from London to Nice, first of all, none of those £20,000 or the other thresholds for bronze and silver even include taxes. So the example we used of Pakistan, those $750, those $750 you're paying in tax don't even qualify, which is wild. Yeah. So if you book an economy ticket, let's say in this example, from London to Nice, you spend £65 for the flight, £15 for just to choose a seat. Then somehow you end up earning 95 tier points for that. So 95 tier points. Let's think about how many flights you need to take from London to Nice to earn gold status. To be fair, they're not making any revenue on that type of passenger. So in a way, it's... Or not any profit, sorry. So in a way, it's fair to not want to incentivize that type of travel. But
you'd have to do 211 flights.
Okay. So basically, more than every other day. But then more he has an example of London to New York in Premium Economy, World Traveler Plus. Yeah. So if you spent £1,418, your eligible spend, because you don't include the taxes, would be £1,120. So you're actually, your eligible spend is £300 less. Then you would earn 1,120 tier points. Let's keep in mind, Premium Economy is the most profitable cabin per square foot of any airline cabin. So this is where British Airways should want people flying. To only get to get silver status, which is Oneworld Sapphire, so it gets you okay benefits, but you know, not amazing. Then you would have to, let's see, you would have to take hold on a minute. It's basically more than six round trips a year between New York and London in Premium Economy just to get silver status, which that's a lot to get mid-tier status, not even the highest status.
The threshold now, so £7,500 is the spend
to get silver
for a silver status, and that's per passenger as well. So it's not if you were, for example, you know, two of you traveling together on one booking, family of four, then you might think, okay, that's not too bad, like in terms of reaching that point, because you know these trips can be expensive anyway. It's all of this comes into play at on the 1st of April this year. The blowback has just been huge. All of the papers are in on it. The Financial Times, the Times, then the Sunday Times had their own piece. It's just been something that I'm not sure if BA will have anticipated the level of, you know, the eruption, but they must have, because everyone and their dog currently qualifies for gold. And this is literally wiping out a huge bulk of their consumer base.
Yeah. So now for some advice, what should you do instead for your Oneworld status?
Yeah.
My plan, and obviously this is unfortunately US specific, is to just start earning status through credit card spend, which you can do through with American Airlines. And the thing is, in the US,
and I will let you finish the point, but that is literally the solution for someone like you who is an American, right?
Yeah.
For everyone that is peed off about this in the UK, none of what you're about to say applies to them.
Exactly. Right? So first I'm going to tell them my plan.
Okay. Which is, to be clear.
Yeah. So I should explain that the US Oneworld carriers, both American and Alaska, have four status tiers as opposed to three with British Airways. And the amazing thing is that the third highest tier, so not the highest, but the third one, is also Oneworld Emerald. So it gives you all the nice benefits you want across the alliance, even if you're not the top tier. So that's the first thing to know. Yeah. My plan is to try to go for Platinum Pro with American, which requires 0 miles flown. All you have to do is spend, well, the spending requirement is high, but you need to spend
because you started the sentence with all you have to do.
I know, but all you have to do is spend money on a credit card. You don't have to hop on a plane. You don't have to do anything.
How much money?
So you have to spend $125,000 for this status in a year. But so then that works for people who have businesses or people who have high expenses, you know? But the thing is, it's any spend.
But it's not going to work for most.
Yeah, it's either your groceries, your whatever. But
so basically you're saying that the solution would be in that scenario that someone literally, their whole life, everything that involves a payment, be it a bill, a mortgage, a food shop, a holiday, a renovation, whatever, they are solely paying on this one card.
Yeah.
Because then if we were each of us to add up what we spend for everything in life every year, so there are some people that would actually exceed that or easily exceed it based on their own spending requirements. Maybe they're, for example, buying a property, but But, well, I mean, you can't buy a property on a card, but not all of them. It'd be great if you could.
Yeah. Yeah, then you just get instant status. So for some people, that's an option. And what I'm planning to do is, of course, combine it with flying. So maybe I'll earn 30 or 40,000 points through flying if I'm lucky. Right. And then I'll earn the rest through the credit card. So then maybe I need to spend, $80,000 a year, which is the equivalent of, let's see, about $6,500 per month, or a bit more than that. So, you know, that's my plan.
Now come to me with a second solution. Yeah. For other people. For most people.
Okay, you already have your status sorted. You're with Qatar.
Well, I'll talk about my situation in a minute. Okay, so you go on, you do yours, and then I'll...
So personally, the only first of all, the bad news, it is going to be way more expensive and difficult for everyone who has had British Airways status to maintain those levels of status, because that's why everyone has been with British Airways, because it's been so cheap and so ridiculously easy. So wherever you go now, it's going to be much harder. And I've seriously considered switching over to Qatar for several years. But every time I do that little calculator they have on their website, I'm like, ooh, like I would need to fly at least twice as much to get that status as I would with British Airways. So it doesn't make sense, even though I would love...
That's not because Qatar's thresholds are high. It's because British Airways have always been so low.
Yeah. Right. So I was like, you know, I would love to have Al Maha services. I would love to go to Al Safwa. Like Qatar has fantastic benefits. But to me, I've just been like, you know what? I'll stick with BA. Now it's going to hurt for everyone. So my advice for most people is to try to earn status with Alaska Airlines instead. Because the thing about Alaska, so there's a few tricks you can do here. The first is
to fly Alaska in the year.
No, you don't. And
because if I'm telling a couple from Hertfordshire, let's say, you guys don't need to worry. You need to switch your frequent flyer status to Alaska Airlines. Yeah. They are going to look at me incredibly puzzled.
I know. And most people are still going to be puzzled because they don't realize that because I live in London, I have to use BA. That's not how it works. You could be loyal to Qantas and live in London and never go to Australia.
But I think with Qantas, you have to fly.
Maybe.
In order to get
just,
status credits. Yeah.
I just wanted to mention a far off airline.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
So the point with Alaska, the thing that makes it great is that to get One World Emerald, the equivalent of what BA Gold was, you need to earn 75,000 points in a year. So you need to either fly 75,000 points, but there's a few ways to get around this, including, award tickets earn points with Alaska Airlines. So when you use their points to redeem on whatever airline it might be, for example, Qatar Airways, you're not paying cash. You still earn elite qualifying points. That's one thing that makes it great.
Even though you're redeeming points.
Yes, even though you're redeeming.
So you're burning and earning.
Yes, you're burning redeemable points and you're earning status points.
Right. That's it. So you're not earning currency, Avios, but you are. Do Alaska use Avios? No.
No. They use miles, they call it.
Okay. Yeah. So again, to be clear, so, you know, the couple in Hertfordshire, they switch to Alaska Airlines, okay? So they sign up, they're using their UK address. They then enter in the Alaska number into all of their One World Alliance bookings. So that's everyone from British Airways, Iberia, Qatar, Japan Airlines, Malaysia Airlines, Sri Lanka and Royal Jordanian and Oman and,
Iberia,
and American Finnair, and whatnot.
Yeah.
Right, okay. So in order for them to earn, do they face the same difficulty that you have with British Airways in that, is it revenue-based?
No, it's not at all revenue-based. It's just based on the distance you fly. That's what's fantastic. So
it's much easier route to status. Now, what many of them don't realize is, let's say, for example, they do a few trips or long-haul trips a year, right? That will almost definitely, providing they're not booking the lowest class economy fare, that will almost definitely put them on path, if not secure them, the equivalent of silver, right? One World Sapphire. And what many of them don't realize is, That then means instantly the exact same perks they already enjoy with British Airways now. The difference is it says Alaska on that actual physical card. So do they still check in at where they checked in at the business class silver check-in area?
Yeah,
at
or
Terminal
the first
5? Yes.
Class area.
Do they go, well, if they're gold or above, yeah. Do they go to, for example, the same lounges that they were in as silver members with BA, now as silver members of Alaska, somewhere they don't live, don't plan on going to, think it's too cold, never flown the airline, don't want to since the door blow out, blah, 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 right? Yes, they still have access to that lounge in Terminal 5. Do they still have access to the British Airways lounges abroad? Maybe when they were coming back from Geneva, they would like to, as silver members, they popped into the Geneva lounge. Yes, and every other Oneworld lounge, because this is where Oneworld becomes the saviour here. So if you have been shortchanged by this British Airways deal, now is time to choose which Oneworld carrier you are going to hypothetically get into bed with and never have to actually fly, and start earning with them. Because the thresholds are far more achievable with those carriers now than what has happened to BA. Am I correct in summarizing that? Is that the message?
100%. Yes, that's correct.
Brilliant. Good. Look at me. I'm going to set up one of your courses, but under my name.
Exactly. So I would say, you know, read about this, look it up, and try to do a cost calculation for yourself. But ultimately, here's my lesson. Airline status is never worth chasing. The cost is always too high for the benefits. So
stay rational.
I'm 330 tier points away from getting BA gold before the end of March, so I can keep it for the next year.
For the year.
Yeah.
And then you probably won't qualify for that year because at that point it will be the 20,000. Yeah.
But so even then, and I'm quite close, I have, you know, well over 1,000 tier points. You need 1,500. Okay. I'm at 1,100 something.
Okay.
Even then I'm like, is it worth it? Like, even if I was 40 tier points away and I needed to take a 200-pound British Airways flight, you know, to Sofia or Bucharest or something from London, even then I'm like, so what am I getting for this exactly? I'm getting access to first class lounges a few times a year. What is the monetary value of that? Or I'm getting an extra bag. So you really need to do that calculation, because for me to earn these 330 tier points, I'll need to spend at least an additional $1,000. I never bring more luggage than what I'm already allowed. I would love to go to the Finnair Platinum Wing next time I fly Finnair. But okay, I get a free... yeah, thank you. So I get a free Beyond Burger that would cost me 20 euros out in the terminal.
Outside,
Not worth $1,000 extra.
Yes, you're right.
The time it matters is if you're flying economy and you have no status. That's, of course, when it's nice to have seat selection, luggage, a lounge. But again, how much extra is it for Club Europe? Perhaps you just book Club Europe instead of chasing status.
And you know that I am sometimes part of that school of thought. So I don't collect with British Airways. I collect with their partner in the Oneworld Alliance, Qatar Airways. So I am a platinum on the Privilege Club. And a lot of people are now going to be switching to Privilege Club because of these changes. So it's definitely a more sensible option if you're flying around Asia a lot. That's for sure. And you don't have to fly with QR. You can continue to fly with BA. But you're so right. You need to remain rational about, in actual fact, as you know, what you're doing and what you're spending and what you're spending to chase that free perk that actually, you know, very often if it's out of season, if the kids are in school in the UK or whatever, and I'm doing a quick European hop from, you know, from London to southern Spain, for example, if I know that we're taking a lot for whatever reason, for the place, for this, for that, whether it's something like an ornament, furniture, whatever, in order to get those extra bags, sometimes the difference between economy and Club Europe, where they're going to give champagne and some kind of meal on board, is the difference of about £85.
Yeah.
Whereas if I was to stick with an economy ticket and buy the luggage I needed to to take on that, it would surpass £85.
Yes. Yeah.
And so it's just, and the website's not actively telling me, hi, you get this and more if you just, and it's cheaper if you just book business class. Yeah. I have to be the one to spot that and make that decision. And I think that is what is important going forward as well, especially for people that are not tied to term time vacationing, term time holidays. You have the ball in your court to be savvy about how you approach this, whether you think chasing status is worth it, and if so, switch to a One World partner, or if not, save the money, keep it for yourself, spend it elsewhere, spend it on things that matter, memories and meals and all these kind of things, yeah, and not being caught up on the fact of the, you know, 25-minute, you know, bacon sarnie run in the club lounge that's always packed at 5 o'clock in the morning anyway.
Yeah,
it's about maintaining very perspective, well, for sure.
Yeah. And I think probably the benefit that I appreciate the most if I'm flying economy and I don't have status,
yeah,
or if I do have status, is getting premium check-in, just getting to skip the line if I'm checking a bag.
I think that I think is one of the biggest game changers. Not even priority boarding, because sometimes, yeah, we don't like to get on first, we like to get on last. Yeah. But I think you're right. The fact that you can maximize your day by almost having this guarantee that you will not have to queue at check-in is, yeah, one of the most valuable perks.
Exactly. Right. But then I think, in my opinion, people way overstate the value of a lounge. Like, it's just not...
100%, 100%. And the amount of times, you know us, we walk into lounges, we walk straight back out of them.
Yeah.
If they're not, you know, especially the standard across Asia is amazing. The Middle East is phenomenal. Then you go into Europe and I'm looking at this food that's been sat there for... There are plenty of episodes where I've spoken about food that should not be consumed, having been sat in a lounge under a lamp for 6 hours, yeah, and people wonder why they then, you know, have an upset stomach the next day. And these armchairs, and they're glorified waiting rooms in so many scenarios.
Yeah, and we should also mention that the best lounges you actually rarely get into with status. Cathay Pacific is amazing with this, Japan Airlines, yeah, but BA, you know, they don't let you into the Concorde room, which is their actual, yeah, good lounge.
Yeah.
Then Qatar has the most amazing lounges, Al Safwa and Al Murjan. But if you're flying with status, you're not going there. You're going somewhere where at that point, you might as well just buy an avocado toast at Evergreen in the terminal, which is
always a good idea.
Always a good idea. Instead of investing so much to get the status, to get that, yeah, benefit. If you need a shower, most airports have a shower, yeah, you can rent, or there's an in-terminal hotel or something where you can use a shower,
yeah,
for $10 or $15. That's, again, so much cheaper than what you're paying to chase status. So people are always surprised, yeah, I think, to hear how I traditionally have had almost no status with airlines, because I just don't think it's worth chasing it. It's not worth investing more than a couple hundred pounds extra.
Especially if people are paying thousands to chase status, but then not, yeah, realizing that if they're only taking one big trip a year, why not allocate that on paying for,
yes,
an amazing business class long haul trip, right? Rather than having status to boost your economy flights.
Yeah.
You know, if you were going to pay £1,500 to get a business class and then only be doing one big trip and the rest of the short haul, use that money on your New York trip and go all out and enjoy it. And guess what? The moment you've booked business class, you have everything that you were chasing status for. Priority check-in, you've got the lounge, you've got the priority, yeah, boarding, you've got the luggage, and you've got the beautiful the cabin on board as well.
And,
so,
and you, yeah, know what? Airlines need to become way better at monetizing those extra services. Etihad, yeah, does this incredibly well. Like on their website, yeah, when you're managing your booking, they say, do you want to add priority check-in? $20.
That's true.
Do you want to
That's
add true. Priority security? Do you want to add priority boarding? You can add everything, so you can have no status,
but
fly
do
economy
you agree
and
with
still
that?
Get those
do
benefits.
You, see, as someone with status, I don't want that offered to everyone, because then it dilutes the perk, right?
Yeah,
it's like that balance.
The thing is, there's always just a tiny subset of people who are going to pay for it. So I just
true.
Think having the option to do it, like I imagine when I have kids, that's when, yeah, I think airline status might come in most handy, because I'm not going to be booking 4 business class tickets for me and my kids. So then, yeah, it's like, well, now we need to figure out a way to fly as comfortably and easily as possible, not stand in line all day and still
I think we already established what's going to happen. They're going to be flying on round the world trips with Uncle Alex. We have discussed this many times. Okay, yeah. They're going to, they don't want to fly with you with your no status. Know, they're going to be like, Alex, take us to Al Safwa. Of course, come on, kids, let's go.
Yeah, no, but so my point is being able to add that when you're a family would be so valuable just to reduce the stress. And listen, and loads people were in touch with status, us about this. People with status are so cocky. Everyone's like, move out of it. Like, you know, you get like that. You're like, move out of my way. Like, I'm premium. The truth is, the people that have status, either they've gamed their way to the status by knowing the sweet spot routes or whatever, or their employers are paying for it. The fraction of people who have status who have actually personally paid £20,000 now in the future to have BA Gold is so minuscule that it's like, you don't even have a right to look down on people who don't have status and be like, why, you know, I don't want you to be able to buy my service. That should be offered for purchase.
I think the obsession, especially in the UK, about that and this kind of attitude that it's for them, but not them. So I flew first class, right?
Yeah.
Landed at Heathrow. And when I was at the baggage belt, a guy came up to me and he said to me, not hi, how are you, blah, blah, blah. He marched straight up to me and he said to me, so how did you get all that then? I said to him, excuse me? And I was on the phone. I said, excuse me. He said, well, that with first class and everything. He said, I've been British Airways gold for life, the gold guest list. He said, I've been a gold guest list for years. He said, but and I fly for blah, 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 volunteering all this stuff that, you know, I didn't ask him about. He goes, but how did you get it now for this trip? And I looked, I was like,
none of your business.
Really sorry. I'm on the phone. And then I walked up and I was like, seriously, there's this like level of like, you know, this great, you do you, you know.
I think even the way that people who have paid for business or first class, you know, when you've spent a lot, you get a certain entitlement because you are entitled to more. That's just true. When you've paid more, you're entitled to get more. But there are so many rich, famous, influential people who choose to fly economy. So I just think there should be a better balance of being able to offer different services to different people. For example, I know that the Swedish royals, in order to appear democratic and humble, fly economy anywhere they go, but they add VIP services at the airport, so they get whisked off their plane in a Bentley to the Frankfurt VIP lounge.
Yeah,
but they're still sitting in economy. So there's people want different things for different parts of the trip, and I think airlines need to be better at offering that.
And the final point I think we'll make before we wrap is that remember that British Airways Executive Club owes the passengers nothing. It is a reward scheme. It is to reward loyalty. Now, I know rewarding loyalty is incredibly important, but nobody's owed the gold or the silver or the access or whatever. It's something they have created, and arguably they've created Frankenstein, and now they're trying to rewind and, you know, and do all that. Well, look, seriously, I think that was an excellent learning experience, not just for the listeners but also for me. I've been wanting and meaning to talk all of this through with you, but I wanted to respect your space over the holiday period and the new year.
We were holding space for the holidays.
We were holding space, and now we've come back, and I will not allow you any space because we will be here every Wednesday, wherever you get us. Most of you listening to us on Spotify, feel free to watch this episode back on YouTube if you want to see us in vision. And until then, I think, Dan, I will safely wrap and say see you next week.
Yeah, we'll see you next week on air. Bye, guys. Bye, Alex.
See you later.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Get 10 for $10 on select varieties of Kroger pasta, Starkist tuna pouches, or Powerade with your card. Then get 6-ounce packs of juicy raspberries or blackberries for $1.88 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, Dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.